Coming up on the Shelley Irwin Show podcast today, we talk about the advocacy work of the League of Michigan Bicyclists. The Playhouse at White Lake supports a wonderful White Lake Youth Theater program. We get the details. The owner and chef of American Char, Chef Len Town, celebrates 10 years. We talk to him. We talk to a local author about her book, Double Crossed, The World War II Spies Who Saved D-Day, and Mr. J pens the Patrick Picklebottom series. We talk to him as well.
Have you heard of the League of Michigan Bicyclists? You should. And if you haven't, you'll learn a lot thanks to Executive Director Andy Rohrer in the house. Andy, first of all, thank you for your service. You did a little Army routine.
I did. I joined the Army in 1999 for a four-year enlistment and ended up not coming home for 26 years. So we just moved back to Grand Rapids in July of last year, 2025.
Yes, so there we are. Has Grand Rapids changed since you left?
It has, but it's still in the same place, and it's still the same. It still feels like home, I should say.
Thank you for that. Did you ride your bike as a kid?
I did.
Do you ride your bike as an adult?
I do.
Should we be riding bikes?
Everybody should ride a bicycle.
Well, again, thank you for your service, but you are back in town. You are now the executive director of the League of Michigan Bicyclists. What is this organization?
So the League of Michigan Bicyclists is a statewide advocacy organization that really works to promote safety for cyclists and maintain access. And we aim to serve all cyclists and to serve the community. A really important thing for people to consider is that, you know, bicycles are actually considered under the state law legal traffic on the roads. Of course, cyclist has a responsibility to choose safe routes. But our goal is to make more routes safer for them to use and also to ensure that people have access. A lot of mountain bikers struggle to have access. There's always challenges with land use, et cetera. And so we just work in that space to ensure that people can pursue this healthy pursuit safely.
Are you an organization that is membership driven?
We are membership driven, and really the reason for that is that as an advocacy organization, the more members we have, the more legitimacy we have when working on their behalf and on the behalf of even those who are not our members. The reality is the legislators and policymakers will listen to the population, will listen to the people, and the more people advocating for something, the more likely it is that they will be successful in achieving their goals.
Are you including all kinds of cyclists, bicyclists, the fat tire, the mountain bike, the gravel, the road?
Absolutely. Anybody that rides a bicycle is a bicyclist, and anybody that rides a bicycle is our constituency. I will also add in that, you know, there's another aspect of cycling a lot of people don't think about or overlook frequently, but it's the commuters, the urban riders. Mm-hmm. You know, because they're not viewed as people engaging in it for sport. A lot of those people are actually using a bicycle to get to and from work, some of them by choice, some of them by necessity. But they also deserve the benefits of our work as well. And frankly, I would tell a lot of cyclists that don't use their bicycles in that way, those urban commuters and those types of people riding their bicycles, frankly, are out there visible all the time to everybody. And they are really the ones that are normalizing us riding our bicycles. We also advocate for people riding on e-bikes. E-bikes are a way for a lot of people to stay engaged in the sport, you know, and just to use their bikes for even transportation. It just makes it easier. And it bears noting that under Michigan law, there are three classes of e-bike, but all of those are considered legal conveyance, and they are treated as bicycles, not as motor vehicles. Mm-hmm. And so we also absolutely support the use of e-bikes.
Yes. Let's, I guess, get this elephant out of the room. How are we doing? And I want to talk more about advocacy and what you're doing and, of course, how we can support. But safety. We've got to work with our automobile drivers.
Well, I mean, first things first. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, we live in a country where, because of the large spaces, especially between our urban centers, if you just look at Michigan, the automobile is frankly a necessity, or it's become a necessity because we've built an infrastructure which is automobile focused and automobile based. We don't use a lot of public transit or mass transit like trains. We do in some of the larger cities, but intercity, there's not a lot of options for moving about other than in motor vehicles. But then those motor vehicles move into our cities, and they dominate even the road infrastructure, street infrastructure in our cities. And so I would say we're not doing poorly. I think really it's an awareness thing. I think there's a lot of people that just don't consider that a bicycle would be out there. And frankly, we have infrastructure that makes it difficult for people to use their bicycles in a safe way. You know, frequently you see in the comments section of posts in social media, YouTube, etc., people saying, oh, the cyclists, they should be on the sidewalk. Well, actually, it's not the safest place for a cyclist, for instance, because it makes them virtually invisible to automobile drivers. And so we really need to continue to work towards, a complete streets view of infrastructure to make it safer for cyclists that are on street. Another aspect of safety that I think is often overlooked is you have a lot of mountain biking areas. Some of them are in enclosed parks or in enclosed spaces that don't cross roads, but some of them do cross roads. We have Tart Trail up in Traverse City, which will cross roads. We have the VASA, which is another pretty large off-road trail network and dirt-focused, crosses roads. Cannonsburg State Game Area here in West Michigan, it has a pretty extensive trail inside the game area, but it crosses a road. It crosses 5 Mile, if I remember correctly. I'm doing the map in my head. But, you know, as a cyclist, if you're riding on that and you cross that road, if you're not paying attention, you could be, you know, having a less than desirable interaction with an automobile or with a motor vehicle. And so there's all aspects of safety that are necessary for cyclists, whether they're riding on the road, they're commuting, they're riding for sport, or they're engaging in mountain biking.
The cyclists must follow the rules of the road.
100%.
Yes. So you would advise that cross to stop.
Yes.
Yes.
That's the law.
Even if there's not a stop sign.
Well, that's where it gets a little dicey.
I want you to stop. That's for sure. But
yes,
I'm going back.
Look, safety is the responsibility of the rider. And so ultimately, you know, you can't have an expectation that a car is going to stop for you. I'll use the example of Cannonsburg State Game Area, where there is a road crossing there, even if there's not a stop sign. You should expect at least that you have to treat it as a yield. I believe if it's not marked a stop sign, you treat it as a yield. But at the end of the day, safety is still the responsibility of the cyclist crossing that main route of traffic.
Yes. Executive Director, League of Michigan Bicyclists, Andy Rohr with us. What else is in your advocacy pocket? What else do you need to accomplish in 2026?
Well, I guess I can list it down since I brought them with me.
Yes.
The first, our primary goal right now is something called the Justice for Vulnerable Roadway Users Act. We sometimes just refer to it as the VRU. We need to get this over the goal line this year. We're close. It is working its way through the House, and we are confident that the governor will sign it once it gets to her desk. Ultimately, what this will do is it will close a gap in the motor vehicle code or in the Michigan compiled law where... Right now, if you are a vulnerable roadway user and you are struck and injured or killed by a motorist, there is virtually no penalty that can be levied against that motorist unless a prosecutor can prove that the motorist was negligent or deliberate about striking and killing. As we all know in Michigan, because we see the signs when we drive through construction areas, there are signs that tell you if you strike and injure or kill a worker, there are penalties associated. There's no conditions placed upon that. If you hit that construction worker,
yes,
there are penalties. But if that construction worker is walking to work or riding their bicycle to work, they have no protections like that. If a driver strikes and kills them, they could be charged with a misdemeanor or nothing at all. And so ultimately what we're doing, and this is moving through, there have been some pretty high profile accidents that have occurred. For instance, there was an incident that occurred in Kalamazoo in 2016 where a driver intentionally drove into a crowd of people on their bicycles. And the only reason that he ended up being subject to pretty harsh penalties was due to a prosecutor and investigator that were determined to figure out exactly what happened, and they were able to uncover some history with this person. But in a normal case, even then, it might have only been a misdemeanor. And so we really think that that's an important thing to close. The next thing that will come up is there's these things that we don't know what they're really called. I mean, we call them e-motos or e-motorcycles for short. They're motorcycles that appear to be or are marketed as e-bikes, but they are absolutely not e-bikes underneath the Michigan law.
I've seen some of those on our park trails, yeah.
You have. Yeah. They are absolutely not allowed on the trails, but they are also not defined in the law right now, and it's problematic. Some of them can achieve some pretty high speeds, like highway-level speeds. Mm-hmm. They are completely being sold as e-bikes to people. They are dangerous. People are putting their children on them, not realizing they're not buying an e-bike. They're buying a motorcycle. And we've started discussions with various agencies in the state, and there's a recognition that there needs to be something done about this. And this is not about prohibiting or closing that avenue off. It's about appropriately regulating them for safety's sake. But from my perspective, and from the perspective of the League of Michigan Bicyclists, we need to really get this handled so that we can preserve the access to e-bikes that exists right now, because there are so many people using e-bikes for various reasons, whether it's to continue engaging in the sport. You know, as people get older, they you know, and our bodies decline, but our minds don't. We want to stay engaged. This is a way for people to continue engaging in the sport that they enjoy and love. You know, there's also instances where you have differently enabled people. My wife is not as strong as I am on a bicycle, but an e-bike allows her to go for a ride with me if she wants to.
Yes.
And there's all kinds of reasons why we don't want e-bikes to be inadvertently harmed by this other class of vehicle that's not being defined.
Wonderful. Andy, we only have a minute or so left. Is there a way to find out more information about what is happening this year and how to get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So our website is very easy to find. It's lmb.org. Or you can just Google League of Michigan Bicyclists, and I can assure you we will come up at the very top of the Google search or whatever your preferred search engine is. I would also encourage people, if they have an interest, to get involved, become an advocacy member. It costs nothing. There are some membership tiers that will give other benefits, but they're not required. The most important thing that is, if you care about bicycling or you care about a bicyclist, be a member, be an advocate, give us your voice so that we can advocate on your behalf.
Andy Rohr, what's your choice of bike?
Pretty much anything that has two wheels.
Good for you. I'm glad you have circled back to become once again a citizen of our Grand Rapids, you and your family. Thank you, Executive Director, League of Michigan Bicyclists, for your leadership, Andy Rohr. Take care.
Thank you.
Playhouse at White Lake supports a wonderful White Lake Youth Theater program. There's a Disney focus now through June. Cindy Beth Davis Nykema with the details. Who doesn't love a Disney theme? Good morning to you, Cindy Beth.
Good morning, Shelley. How are you today?
Fine, watching the definitely not the sun come up, but the beautiful banks of our Grand River here and enjoying a great Monday morning. I always start with, remind me of the good work of the Playhouse at White Lake, please.
I am overjoyed to do so. I have the great pleasure of working in arts education at the historic Playhouse at White Lake, which will be celebrating 110 years this September, if you can believe it. And we are thrilled to boast our $4 million renovation, lovingly put together over, you know, several years by our community. And we are a 17,000 square foot state-of-the-art facility with our historic bones in place, providing year-round programming, everything from the White Lake Youth Theater that we're talking about today, to our White Lake Dramatic Club, community theater programming, and summer theater festival, professional arts festival all summer long, and really just everything in between.
Yay. Get up and see the venues. All right. Talk to me about what's in store for the kids with a Disney theme.
Well, Shelley, we at the White Lake Youth Theater have been providing programming for the Shoreline community of kids since 1973. So in that time, we have expanded from being just a solely summer play production to now being year-round programming for everything from the smallest preschoolers all the way up until, as I mentioned, you can graduate from the White Lake Youth Theater Program right into our White Lake Dramatic Club, which is our community theater programming. So basically, this year we decided we're looking at the way things are shifting with learning and with attention spans and with engagement with learning and development, and we're just noticing that a lot of kids have a lot on their plate and that when they come to us, they're excited about learning, but also oftentimes it can feel really overwhelming to them, or maybe sometimes they have some anxiety around what a production experience will look or feel like. So what we've decided to do is kind of take it apart in pieces and make it more bite-sized throughout the course of the winter, so that that way we have the opportunity to work with the weather, which, as you mentioned today, you know, sometimes can be challenging. And then also being able to kind of build upon the skill sets that they learn in these quieter, darker months of the year to provide them that familiarity with our staff and our team of educators, so that when they come on board for a full week-long spring break day camp like we do in April with Sleeping Beauty, or a full week long June day camp, which is our summer day camp, Disney's Dare to Dream Junior, then they kind of already have the chance to have exposure to our educators, to the state-of-the-art facility where they're learning, and then, of course, to be able to feel like they've already learned some of the songs and dances. And that's how we've decided to develop the program this year, is over the span of 6 months, they have the chance to take drop-in workshops on a Saturday for 2 hours. They learn a song and a dance during that time, and then over the course of 4 months, they will have learned up to four of those should they choose. Then when they come into audition, when they sign up for their summer day camp, they already have a bunch of the material under their belt, and they'll already know quite a few of our artist educators.
Again, good things in store. How does one begin getting involved?
Sure, that's a great question. So since it's such a big program these days, the best place to start is just to shoot me an email at davis-dykema@cityofwhitehall.org, or you can go online to our website, theplayhouse@whitelake.org, or, of course, social media, Facebook and Instagram. Shoot us a little message and just let us know about your family. Oftentimes, people will come to the community or even be a little outside of maybe an easy driving range. But, you know, Grand Rapids is just really about a 45-minute, one-hour drive for us. And then all the way up to Hart and Ludington, we pull students as well. So what we find is that if you reach out and say, this is my student, they have these interests and desires, this is their age, we can really kind of help you cater their introduction to the program in a way that makes them feel nurtured and supported from the start. So the way that they can get started is really just to drop into any one of those Saturday classes. And we have one coming up in February on the 14th, and then another one on the 28th. Did you have a chance to see all the different Disney shows that we're going to be featuring, or would you like me to chat a little bit about those?
You got a couple minutes to do that.
I would love to. So in February alone, they have two different dance opportunities because January provided that challenging winter weather, so we did have to reschedule one of them. So now in this month, there are two Saturday workshops for 2 hours, on the 14th and the 28th. And if they come in on the 14th, they're going to get to learn a song and a dance to Be Our Guest from Disney's Beauty and the Beast. And then on the 28th, they can learn a song and a dance to You've Got a Friend in Me from Toy Story. So we have the same choreographers and song educators working on every one of these workshops and through the day camps in the summer. So basically, they come in and meet new kids every month or every session. They get the chance to learn the song and the dance and, you know, have some fun on a Saturday, move their bodies. And then they also have the chance to build that relationship then with the choreographer who they'll be working with through the course of the year, and also with the vocal coach as well.
One more, please.
Sure. So we actually have two more that will be coming up. We've got another one coming in March and another one coming in April. And those will be to Try Everything from Zootopia and A Friend Like Me from Aladdin. But of course, all of these lead into helping to provide familiarity, comfort, a sense of safety and nourishment for the kids as they get to learn both the experience of being a performer on stage and behind the scenes, but also just what it feels like to be a part of a collaborative community like the theater is. So they get the chance to work with different sound techniques, different sound operators and light operators. They might find through the course of the workshop that they really enjoy working behind the scenes. So maybe the next time they'll try operating sound and lights or being a stagehand or an assistant director. the nice thing about our small-knit community is that we can really kind of cater these experiences because we are all about creating a cultivation of compassionate community through our youth artists at the Playhouse at White Lake. So through that week-long day camp coming up in April over spring break for all of Muskegon County, that April 6th through the 10th, we'll have Missoula Children's Theater coming in, and they provide a one-week day camp that gives you a little bit of a different experience because it's a completely different team. And then again, in June, you'll have the chance to work with all those same educators that we've been providing experiences for throughout the entire winter. So we're just looking forward to providing more kind of consistency throughout the course of the year so students can dabble where they like and then see how much they want to build upon in order to provide for themselves a really comfortable safety net to get off the board when they come in for those week-long day camps.
Cool. All this information one more time to get signed up and to change some kids' lives in such a positive way. One more time, Cindy Beth Davis.
Oh, thank you so much. We'd love if you joined us at the Playhouse at whitelake.org or on any social media platform.
Great. Thanks for your time. You know we'll talk again with updates. You take care up north, as they say, hop and a skip away.
Thanks so much.
Hey, it's a 10th birthday for Char, C-H-A-R, American Char, owned by Chef Len Town. He's in the house. He's brought goodies. And yes, celebrating 10 years of business, catering, food truck, restaurants, fun specials, and more. And Len, we've talked, we probably talked your first year. Good morning.
Yeah, that was, yeah, it was the first, good morning. It was the first year, I feel. But 10 years later, here we are.
Thank goodness. Yeah. The alternative is a bit scary. What got you into the world of chefing?
I enjoy food. I enjoy watching people enjoy the experience of food. And for me, that's enough.
Yes. Did you study food? Did you learn by doing?
I went to Le Cordon Bleu in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I was studied out there. So I was out there for about 7 or 8 years, and then Miami for a couple of years, and I came back to Michigan because the work ethic's just a little bit better here.
All right, there we are. Did you grow up here in Michigan?
I did.
Yes. Good. And we call you Chef Len Town with an E, owning American Char. You have to kind of pay your dues to get to where you got?
Certainly, yeah. It took a minute. Definitely learning from some really good chefs over the years. But it's been a blast getting to where I'm at right now.
Right. Where are you located?
6394 Adams Street, Zeeland, Michigan. But it's we pronounce it Drenth, Michigan.
Yes, as you should.
That's right. Awesome.
D-R-E-N-T-H-E, correct?
Yes.
All right, 10 years. Would have been some challenges, would have been some thrills.
Well, we had a thing called COVID that got in the way. That was some trying times. You know, food costs obviously have gone up, but we've maintained. And not dropping the quality of food, actually increasing the quality of food and keeping the cost low enough for the guests to enjoy themselves because they have to drive to us. So it's a way of saying, hey, you know, I appreciate you taking the drive out. Here's some good costs, and we're going to try to make everything from scratch. So we have 8 barbecue sauces we make from scratch. We have everything else is made in-house, but it's a blast with what we do. We have great staff, and we have great customers. I mean, honestly, it's a really good time to watch everybody enjoy themselves, especially in the summer.
What makes for a great staff and what makes for a great customer?
I think the staff just being engaging. I think that's the biggest piece is just spending time and actually caring about the guests walking through the door. And as far as the guests go, just people enjoy food. They enjoy barbecue and the experience of being there because it's interactive. I mean, we really enjoy that the music and everything in the summertime. It's just fun.
Do you give back to the community at all?
We try to give back where we can with churches and local organizations. We spend as much as we can. I mean, I can't keep track of how many things we actually give away because we care about people. And we want to see people succeed and do well. And we're having fun with what we're doing.
Do you have food for those who choose not to eat meat?
We offer mac and cheese and slaw. But yeah, we have options. We have options. We make a wood-fired pizza also, so it's nice. We have a wood-fired oven that we bought right after COVID, and then we expanded our kitchen a little bit, so we do some really nice wood-fired pizzas.
Yes. But yet, you are all about American char, which means what?
I mean, char, basically the bark on the outside of a brisket and the pork, so we call it char. And it was a kind of a fun name, and we have a huge flag in our dining room. It's just nice. I mean, it's a really it's a nice product to put out to people with the barbecue.
You have some specials this week. Let's talk beginning what, February 3rd?
That's yes,
tomorrow.
Tomorrow. So we'll start with the, we're doing a brisket we roll. It's a double smoked brisket, burrito, and then we'll do wing special on Wednesday. We do a whole hogger, which is pork, sausage, bacon, and cheese sauce over the top on top of a bun with fries on Thursday. And we're doing a fraco box. It's a Friday taco box. It'll be, have taquitos and a couple tacos. And then on Saturday, we're just going to do 10% off and then offer key lime pies from 5 to 7.
You've brought in key lime pies. Talk to me about why key lime. Aren't we supposed to be in Key West? That's cold down there now.
That's now we're talking. Yeah. So I spend a little time in Key West. I enjoy key lime pies because of the freshness that you get. They're really a tasty. I would compete with Kermit's in Key West. So they're dynamite.
Nice. All right. I'm holding a small, I guess, key lime pie with a strawberry on top. And tell me more about, I guess, ingredients and the taste.
Yeah, it's a really simple. It's four simple ingredients. The key is to have a lime. So you want to use the key lime. Key limes are typically smaller and sweeter, but with some tartness. And they're, I mean, it's, I don't know, the flavors are, I can't. Once you eat one, you want to eat another one and another one. It's, but it's nice and refreshing after barbecue. You know, you get something kind of heavy and you want something light and to pull your palate back. And it's a good option for you for sure.
Good. Again, all available this week. And, of course, beyond, thanks to Chef Len Town, American Char, downtown Drenthe. That's your Zealand area, celebrating 10 years of business with catering. What about the food truck these days?
So we don't typically take the food truck out to sit. We'll get specific people actually hire us to go and set up and do an event for special events like Gentex will do something with us. So they'll pull the truck down and do an event. So it's kind of fun. It's a rustic, it's a 70 step van. It's got a little rust on it, but it's nice. I mean, and a rust in a good way on the awning. Right. But it's really a sharp vehicle.
Yeah, there goes that rusty truck. Must be Len's not. Other ways that you're working, how does catering work these days?
So we do a lot with pickup. So obviously the season's coming where everyone's getting the graduation parties. Weddings are huge for us. We do at least 18 weddings a year. So we'll do a lot of that. And you can always contact me through Chef Len cheflenmi@gmail.com. That always works out well. But as far as that goes, yeah, we do a ton of catering and pickups, corporate events, whatever you need. We'll figure it out for you.
Hence why your niche has been so successful. Do you use local farmers?
I try to use local farmers. They can't keep up with the brisket. So far, we kind of figured out about 7,000 briskets. So if you take that and divide it by two, that's two on a cow. So that's 3,500 cows. That's a lot of cow.
Run, Bambi, run. Yes, so you choose wisely and more. What will the next 10 years be like, Chef?
I think a lot of really focusing on catering. I think our catering is a big piece. The restaurant itself is just always, we're going to revamp the menu and do some new items coming here soon. I think just providing really good experience. Always trying to add just a little bit more back to the restaurant and bring it up to level where we want to be. And I think, just trying to, the catering, I think, is a big piece for us.
Do you think about expanding into different areas?
Ooh, now we're talking.
Secret's out.
It's always an option, but I like to be hands-on with everything I do, so it's nice to be just a one-trick pony in that sense.
Good. All right, details again for your specials this week, please.
So we're going to start tomorrow with the burrito, and we're going to end on Saturday with 10% off on all items. And then from 5 to 7, we'll give away key lime pies as just a way to say thank you.
All right. Be careful. You might start with the key lime pie and then get into the brisket, as they say. All right, Chef Lynn Town, American Char, downtown Drenthe. Congratulations on 10 years. And let's go find that interview we did 10 years ago.
Yeah, that would be great.
There we go. One more time, best way to find out more information.
You can either contact me on the social media platforms, or you can reach out to me, cheflenmi@gmail.com.
Thank you for bringing in the little key lime pies. I will grace our staff with your presence. Take care. Happy 10. She has Michigan in her blood. Once a Michigander, always a Michigander. We talk to you, Rebecca Barone. Your book is out, Double Crossed, The World War II Spies Who Saved D-Day. We say the book is out, i.e. pre-order ready. Have you always wanted to be an author, Rebecca?
I have not always wanted to be an author. I came to writing pretty late in the game, as they say. I'm an engineer by training, and I write now, but that was certainly not always the case.
Good. As I like to share inspiration for one who reaches for their dream and makes it happen. So when did you know it was time to, move into the latest work you've been working on, Double Crossed? How do you start?
So, yeah, this comes from a conversation with my editor. So I have a wonderful editor that I've worked on. This will be my fourth book with him now. So Brian Geffen out of Macmillan, Holt Book for Young Readers, is an imprint of Macmillan. And I had written one about breaking the Enigma Code in World War II. Kids love World War II, and I think there's such a hunger for more World War II stories, and certainly all of the real-life spies. You know, who doesn't like thinking about James Bond and spies? Yeah. But then when you realize that these people were real. And so he asked if I could come up with another story. What else from World War II? And this story about how double-crossed spies really deceived Hitler and the Germans and had a very major, very tangible impact on the war, was so ripe for telling. I mean, it has all the elements of such a wonderful spy story in terms of the tension, the deceit, the lies, the, you know, all of that great spy craft that goes on, and then how it just made such an impact. So certainly my readers should know this story. So I was excited to tell it.
Now, this is such that you're targeting middle grades here?
Yes, yeah, so this is a middle grade story. It is targeted, I think the age range that the publisher specifies is 10 to 14. So it's on the upper end of middle grade. That said, I think with, you know, 9, 10 years old kind of being the lower bound, I do think older readers would like it as well. I know high school readers, I've done book clubs for adults as well. So that while it is targeted at middle grade readers, I think it's accessible for them, and I think it can be enjoyed by just about anyone.
Wonderful. All right, let's take us back to the fall of 1943. This is a narrative nonfiction account of Operation Bodyguard. Tell us more here, Rebecca.
Sure. So the name gets its the operation gets its name from a wonderful quote by Winston Churchill that says, in a time of war, the truth must be guarded by a bodyguard of lies, must be surrounded by a bodyguard of lies. And so that's how this whole deception campaign, these lies, came to be known as Operation Bodyguard. So it's pretty obvious, you know, fall of 1943 going into 1944, that the Allies are going to need to try and take back Europe from Hitler. Even Hitler can see that. The Nazis can see that. This is pretty obvious. But the who, the what, the when, and the where are all big questions. And there's a couple places that they could end up coming, that the Allies could end up, trying to broach Europe, trying to start their invasion. And so these bodyguard spies, these double-crossed spies, go and lay the groundwork through an extensive set of lies, physical deception campaign. We're talking like dummy aircraft and fake landing fields, dummy landing, you know, a lot of physical deceptions that were put in place to make German reconnaissance believe these lies that the spies were telling. So the spies want to convince and ended up convincing the Germans that the Allies were going to land in Pas-de-Calais rather than in Normandy, which is, of course, we know where they all ended up coming from. They convinced the Germans, and I suppose this is spoiler alert, but you know, anyone can read it from World War II. They ended up convincing the Germans that they were going to come through Pas-de-Calais so successfully that they kept 250,000 troops in reserve. So we're talking just a few hundred miles away from Normandy. There were 250,000 German troops ready to fight, and they were held back expecting for the real, you know, quote-unquote real invasion to come through Pas-de-Calais. So this was an immensely successful campaign, and we all know how devastating D-Day was in terms of casualties, but they were facing 50,000 German troops when they could have been facing an additional 250. So it's really astounding what the, what these spies were able to do.
Is there any spy that you actually put, in other words, can you give us a name of a spy and a story?
Sure. So this book, there were many, many of them involved. This book follows four of them. Dusan Popov is who we lead with, and he comes to us first as an extremely rich, brash college student, very cocky. He loses some of his cockiness during the war. His friend, he calls Johnny. Johnny is also a spy who kind of comes to the double cross team later in the war, although, again, spoiler alert, we find out that he has been doing quite a bit on his own, even though he comes to the British side, to the Allies in the fullness late in the war. He has been doing a lot on his own, and so we follow that journey as well. We follow Lily Sergeyev, who is Russian by birth but claims French as her nationality. She's the only female spy in this book, and they really did not trust female spies very much. The Allies did not, so they did not use them too much. But she's incredible in what she can create for herself. She's extremely intelligent and very fond of her little dog, Babs. And so how we follow Lily and Babs through the war and their attachment together has some pretty major consequences on the spy ring. And then the final spy is Juan Pusel Garcia, who is a chicken farmer and just very, very dedicated to the idea of helping the Allies. And he gets it through his head that the way he can help the Allies is by being a double-crossed spy for them. So where he gets this idea, he even admits later, it's rather confused thinking. Why would he even be able to do this? But again, he makes his case and he develops his story such that this chicken farmer by trade ends up sending thousands and thousands of letters and information back to his German handlers. And he's the one that lasts the longest. So he ends up sending his last telegram of the war, acting as a spy for the British all the way through the end of the war, is a telegram of condolences to the Germans when he finds out about Hitler's death. So he is not only used in D-Day, but they keep using him after the war because of how successful the efforts of these spies have been.
Wow. And you might have answered this, but just the title, Double Crossed, yes?
Yeah. Yeah, and so that was a little bit interesting because, again, if this book is targeted to kids as young as 10, is that a title they're really going to understand? And it goes a little bit further because double-crossed, they, in World War II, referred to themselves by two X's, you know, two crosses. And then they take that a step further and say that two X's in Roman numerals is 20. So they call themselves the 20 Committee. And again, explaining all of that to kids was interesting. I love that part of my job where I take these very complex ideas and get to explain them in very simple language and explanation. And so I love that challenge. But this title of Double Crossed really is hopefully going to grab people and say that these are not just spies, not that spies are ever usual, but there's something particular about these.
Well, again, your target audience is that middle grade, yet those who are well beyond that middle grade stage still will enjoy. Coming out in April, but now do I pre-order, Rebecca?
You can pre-order any major bookseller, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. This is published by Macmillan. You can go to the Macmillan website. My own website is Rebecca E.F. Barone. That's R-E-B-E-C-C-A-E-F. B as in boy, ARONE.com. It has all the ordering information on there. But like I said, probably easiest just to go through any major bookseller.
All right, keep up the good work. Speak highly of Michigan in your state of Ohio, and I'm sure we'll speak again with your next work. Double Cross, the World War II spies who saved D-Day. Thank you, Rebecca Barone.
Thank you so much, Shelley. I appreciate it.
Well, this is cool. He does good work. Let's call you Mr. J. Beloved children's books are out and about. I hope you've been introduced to the Patrick Picklebottom Experience by Woof Entertainment. Yep, that's the company behind Law & Order and some of television's most iconic crime franchises. Let's move into this conversation where we speak with you. And I guess I'm calling you Mr. J throughout our conversation. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing fine. Thanks for you, a reformed marketing entrepreneur, shifting your focus to the far more challenging and exciting world of children's books, book writings. Ricky, the Rock That Couldn't Roll, and yes, now Patrick Picklebottom and the Penny Book. Fill in the blanks there, if you would.
Sure. So I actually had I had my career in marketing for quite some time, and I enjoyed all of it. But you know, after a little while, I got a little burnt out on it, and I got into writing children's books. My first one was Ricky the Rock That Couldn't Roll, and I still don't really know why, but for whatever reason, that book really hit a chord with a lot of people. And 7 years later, we're north of a million copies on that one, and it spawned a lot of other titles. One of my favorite characters that I've created over the years is Patrick Picklebottom. And that started off with the Penny Book, Patrick Picklebottom and the Penny Book. And the idea was just to write a fun story about a child who buys a book for a penny and all he wants to do is go home and read it. But all of his friends want to divert his attention with their cool, funky electronic toys. And it's just a book about the remembering the enjoyment of reading and being creative. And as I created more with that character, I wanted to age him up a little bit. And so I created the Patrick Picklebottom Everyday Mysteries, which is a chapter book for slightly older kids, middle grade ages. And I've been working with Woof Entertainment, as you mentioned, to create a scripted podcast around that book. And it's been a wild ride and a lot of fun to see it come to life.
Very nice. Tell me a little bit more about the Woof Entertainment collaboration for those of us who may not be in the business.
Sure. So, you know, when I had first gotten involved in all this, I was just setting out to write books and have some fun doing that. I wasn't expecting to break into any other media. And one day I was at my desk and an email came across from Stephen Michael, an executive producer at Woof Entertainment. And I read it quickly and I just kind of ignored it, figuring it was just some sort of a scam. Someone probably wanted me to pay some money for something. But it kept on nagging at me. And a couple of days later, I forwarded on to a buddy of mine who works in Hollywood. And I said, what do you think of this? And he called me back within minutes and said, no, this is legit. This is a real guy and this is a real company and this is a real email. So I ended up reaching out. And from what he told me, Dick Wolf himself had apparently read the book and said, this reads like Law & Order, but for kids. And they wanted to do something in the children's market and they wanted to do something around Patrick Picklebottom. So we worked out a deal and they wrote all the scripts. They did all the production. And I got to say, I was so happy to see that they kept the personalities of my characters in line with what I had written. They created the whole world based off of my foundation. They didn't create anything that wasn't really there, except they just kind of built off of what I had established and made it even more interesting. And so when I listen to the podcast myself, to me, it's like, it's incredible what they've taken off the pages and put into this podcast. And I think kids and parents have been having a really fun time listening to it.
Nice. Your passion is evident. How'd you pick the name Patrick Picklebottom? And I know that many of your book inspirations are thanks to your kids.
And they are. Yeah, I've got four kids now. But this one, actually, the name Patrick Picklebottom came from a niece. I actually come up with the name Roger Wigglesworth, and that was the original name. And I let my family read it, and one of my nieces said, what if you change the name to Patrick Picklebottom? And all my other nieces and nephews all laughed, and I said, you know what, that's a much better name. And so that's where the name came from.
Nice. And is there a growing appetite for mystery content aimed at younger audiences?
You know, I think there is. When I go to a lot of schools and do a lot of author visits and a lot of assemblies, and sometimes I have a lot of time in between assemblies, and I'll sit and talk with kids, and I'll ask them, you know, what kind of books do they like, especially the older kids, the fourth and fifth grade kids. I'm very interested to see what they like. And a lot of them really like horror stories for kids. They like mysteries. They keep coming back to mystery stories. And that's why I thought, you know, and I grew up with the Encyclopedia Brown books, and I love those. And there really isn't a lot like that for kids today. And so I thought, let me see if I can combine something that I really love, which is having a different chapter being a different story where the kids find the clues and help to solve the mysteries, and writing and this character, and let's see if we can create something for this generation to help them find clues and solve mysteries, because kids really seem to enjoy that.
Where the name? Why the name, Mr. J?
My full name is actually Jason Molesky. I've always gone by the name Jay. And I found that as I've gone to a lot of different schools, kids kindergarten through third grade will just butcher my last name. And then no one ever comes close to getting it right. So I said, you know what, let's just go with Mr. J. That works.
There you are. Where do we find your work? And is the Patrick Picklebaum series continuing?
Yeah, so you can find all my books at, obviously, at a lot of most bookstores, as well as Amazon, but there's also lyricandstone.com, which is my publishing company. And yes, Patrick Picklebaum is continuing. We just had Patrick Picklebaum and the Living Room of Lava come out as a picture book for younger kids. The Patrick Picklebaum Everyday Mysteries, book two, is coming out next September. And we are also looking at doing a parallel series along with that called The Cobblepot Chronicles, which is about his best friend, Claire, and some of the adventures that she goes on. So we are definitely looking to expand this. And season two of the podcast will be also coming out next season.
As they say, don't slow it down. Thank you again for your work. One more time, best way to find out more information?
Lyricandstone.com.
All right, keep up the good work. Mr. J and your Patrick Picklebaum series and more. Take care. Your inspiration for the day in tribute to the groundhog. I don't know if this is good or bad because Phil saw his shadow, so you know what that means. Keep the shovel out. The groundhog is like most other prophets. It delivers its prediction and then disappears. Ooh, Bill Vaughn says that.